This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast, and here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Welcome again to the Tennis in 10 podcast. Hope you're enjoying these. This is Ed McGrogan, as always, for Tennis.com at the U.S. Open. And we look back on day five at the Open, moving now, getting some people into the second week, of course. The round of 16 halfway assembled by now on both the men's and women's draws. And a few surprises yesterday, I got to say. You know, two Americans in particular who you have to express some disappointment in. That would be, and you know, the one American who prevailed, I have to say, did not think that would happen. So I think every result involving an American man yesterday did not go according to my predictions or thoughts. Let's start maybe with John Isner and Kyle Edmund. And Isner, who loses actually in a four-set tiebreaker, just, I think, another sort of personification of what this year has been to him. It has not been a successful year, I would even say, for Isner, who lost his grip on the top-ranked American title to Steve Johnson. But this, you know, a loss like this, honestly, is even more disappointing than that. To go and fall to an unseeded player who does not have the experience that Isner has on this stadium, in this tournament, you know, in Grand Slams in general. And with, you know, honestly, I certainly would not say the opportunity to beat Novak Djokovic. I think that's taking it perhaps even a step further. It's, you know, it's just getting the chance to play Djokovic in a form that we don't really know what the Serb has yet. We saw Djokovic advance to the fourth round via retirement. He advanced to the third round via walkover. And he won his first round match looking very less than convincing. Now, I'm sure Djokovic, by this point, you would think is probably, you know, shaking off a bit of those cobwebs, considering he's had so much time to just practice and recuperate. But I can think of very few players that Djokovic would want to play in a full match back after really having almost 4 or 5 days off than Isner. And Isner just does not take advantage of the draw he's given. I mean, Edmund is a fine player, but there are certainly worse third round opponents that he could have met up with. And, you know, it just lets a chance slip by here. And when we look back at Isner's career down the line, I wonder if we're going to look at it as one of the great overachievements in tennis, or truthfully one of the sizable, you know, underachievements, considering that his serve is probably one of the 10, you know, one of the 10 most, if not greatest, most important, or, you know, just unique shots tennis has ever seen. And it, you know, for all his baseline limitations, you have to give Isner credit on how far he's been able to get. He's gone deep at very significant tournaments, not at slams, and I think that's, you know, the best 3 of 5 hurts in there, but this one I think really hurts, and I think it kind of sums up his season thus far. You know, that's also what I kind of want to mention about Ryan Harrison, who beat Raonic in the second round, and I thought was given, you know, another great opportunity to take advantage of this run, to keep it going, to not kind of rest on laurels here against Marcos Baghdatis, who, you know, 10 years ago on this day, we were watching Andre Agassi say goodbye to tennis, the man he was playing in the famous match of that run. His second rounder, the last win of his career, was Baghdatis. That, honestly, is pretty much when Baghdatis peaked. In 2006, when he made the Australian Open final, he, I believe, made the Wimbledon semis as well. And he has been a player who's dealt with a lot of injury and up and down since that point. And I thought that, given what we'd seen from Harrison leading up to this point, getting through qualifying, just rebuilding, I think, his confidence in his game in general, I did expect a better effort from him than against Baghdatis. And we just saw too many errors, just loose play and not what we, you know, what's demanded of someone who wants to make the second round of a slam here. I really think this was a missed shot for Harrison, who I think will rue this moment himself. He's a very cerebral player. He'll think about this. I hope what he takes out of this week, this, you know, really week and a half at the Open, given that he qualified, is that he realizes what needs to be done on this stage to kind of return to here and even surpass it. He still has age on his side. He's only 24. There are doors waiting to be knocked down for players who are able to kind of realize their potential in time. I think this is sort of a transitionary period for the tour. I'm not saying by any means that the top guys are you know, going away anytime soon, but in the middle, you know, there's a lot of room. There's a lot of just moving ground around them, and I think Harrison, from what he occasionally shows, you almost wonder just, you know, why is he not, you know, 30, 40 ranking spots higher than what he is. And I think this has to be one of his more, you know, successful, inspiring seasons on tour that he's had, period. But I was kind of surprised that he goes down 6-1 in the fourth to Baghdatis, you know, again with that crowd obviously firmly on his side. Now, saying that about those two, I think it's worth also, you know, as I look at the draw, you get Jack Sock, who just really has no trouble with Marin Cilic. The 7 seed, the former champion, the number 7 train is derailed as it approaches Main Street Flushing by Sock, who wins 4-3-3 in an hour and 41 minutes. This is the kind of performance that a lot of people have always sort of foreseen Sock as capable of doing, given his gifts, given his forehand, his serve as well. He never faced a break point in this match at all. And it's what, you know, kind of attracted me to write about him for the magazine for a profile. I still find him, you know, one of the most intriguing young prospects in the game, in the American game too. You know, nobody has a forehand like he does. And to use that to reel in, you know, a player in Cilic who I certainly thought was capable of returning to the semifinals. He would not, again, this is another guy who I think could, on the right day, could have troubled Djokovic, you know, given what we saw from Cilic in Cincinnati recently. But a lot of credit to Sock in this one. He will play Joe Wilfried Tsonga, you know, next up in the fourth round. And Tsonga's been on a bit of a roll here too. You know, he has a pretty impressive win over Kevin Anderson yesterday in straight sets, 3-4 and 7-6. Tsonga and Sock is, I mean, that's a really hard-hitting match, of course, with these two. it'll be a tough one for Sock, you know, to follow up on this one. This is certainly going to be a high for him. Not sure what he was expecting out of his match with Chilich either. But Tsonga, you know, he has been through a lot of matches at this level, veteran experience, I think sort of underrated experience. You know, Tsonga is another player who we've kind of wanted to see, you know, maybe break through a little bit more at the slams, but still top 10, still, you know, still knows his way around a best of five set match, you know, like few others. So wanted to hit on those three Americans today in the men's draw. We'll get to the women's more tomorrow on the next Tennis in 10. Be sure to return for our daily recap from the U.S. Open. Thank you for listening.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.